May I boast for a minute? I am ignorant, slow, and significantly limited. This would have been impossible to see in my 20s or 30s or even 40s. Because of my own identity or self-image, I couldn't have seen myself as ignorant, slow, or significantly limited, and so I would certainly not let others see that I might be ignorant. The word itself was a playground slur where I grew up, a way of demeaning others. In your neighborhood, too? At some point along the way, maybe fifth, sixth, or seventh grade, teachers would hear the insult hurled and insist that stupid and ignorant were very different things. They'd complement that distinction with the ancient wisdom that there's no such thing as a stupid question. But hey, folks, the damage was done and imprinted deep in our young minds. I see this imprint reveal itself daily at Berkeley, an elite global university. Nobody wants to look stupid. Oops, I mean ignorant. Maybe 2 out of 50 students will venture an answer when they aren't sure, and maybe 2 others will venture a question. And what a terrific loss. We lose so much individual and group learning when ignorance is disdained in this way. We lose when it's a fundamental definition question, like a student asking, what does ROI, DWWSWWD, or TRTL, turtle, mean? Without the foundation, some body or bodies are falling behind fast. Or the question may feel ignorant, but actually be quite profound. Like the so often unasked question, I'm sorry, just what is success for us? The best way leaders can lower the stigma and heighten question asking is to set the example. Embrace your ignorance, to learn, and to generate a culture that knows it's cool to not be cool. Perhaps the most important words a manager can utter are, I'm not certain. This statement models the value of open-mindedness, pursuing knowledge and wisdom. What if you are much more proud of your ignorance than your knowledge? After all, Google and Wikipedia are much smarter than all of us, but just not as ignorant. Number 2. I'm slow. Me? Ha! I was the obnoxious poster child for fast. In elementary school, I could hardly experience a more forceful rush of adrenaline than when I prepared to shoot my hand up to answer Sister Joan Paul faster than Rose Marantet and Paul Bodner could. The risk generated the adrenaline. The risk, if I put my hand up too fast, was I could get caught with my pants down and my ignorance spreading visibly beet red to the surface of my cheeks. Ah, but the reward of being the fastest, wahoo! How does he do that math problem so fast? I imagined others thinking. Speed training was indeed a good prep for Harvard Law School, political or academic arguments to follow. Be as fast as possible, but without making a fool of myself. I'm still deprogramming. What gets me into the biggest problems in my marriage, as a parent, or as a professional is speed, a false sense of urgency, needing to be right and fast. I've reflected on the example of Chuck Wilbur, how in executive team meetings with the governor, Granholm that is, Chuck was almost never the first out of the gate. He listened, learned, distilled, and then tested his thoughts or tested ours. I've never distilled spirits, but I understand it takes some time. Competitive speed generates unhelpful competition and closes the mind. Slowing the pace may be even more important when it comes to feelings, and feeling is most important for developing collaboration, mutual respect, and powerful group learning. One of the most viral words these days is triggered. Could there be a better image for speed than a trigger. Think of the twitching finger, for example, the truly tragic police officer who thought she was tasing a suspect when in fact she was shooting him to death. It's not my place to judge nor forgive, but I empathize because of my own uncontrolled, reflexive knee-jerk speed that has caused me to say things I wished I'd never said. What if great manager, leader, parents aren't fast, commanding, impressive, but are instead impressive for being judicious, humble, slow and curious, and thus let issues get shaped from all sides? Number three, I am significantly limited. This third shift, which age and experience can allow, is to embrace one's severe limitations and ability. This past week, I worked shoulder to shoulder with my colleague, Ashton. She and I were organizing my complicated calendar for this first quarter. At some IT firms, they utilize paired programming, in which two coders work like Ashton and I were, sharing a single screen and keyboard. Both are wonderful examples of leading by two. As Ashton and I looked at all the trade-offs of time and opportunity cost with respect to my commitments to mom, Jen, adult kids, grandson Dylan, business colleagues, clients, and students, I could feel my anxiety. I don't mean that metaphorically. I was physically tensing. Ashton, on the other hand, was simply reducing complexities to choices, eliminating ones that she quickly showed to be suboptimal, questioning me to clarify my priorities. I was amazed, if not stunned, at how differently we were skilled. I was watching a pro. It made me wonder at the extraordinary losses in time and productivity and increases in mental strain and anxiety I have been suffering by thinking of myself as really smart. I am smart in some types of thinking, but I am so unskilled in others. If the activity Ashton and I had shared was scored like an exam, she would have gotten a 99 and I would have flunked. And I would have come out of the exam pitted out, as my kids would say, due to the stress. Likewise, in strategic work with our clients, I felt a push and pull with my partner, Laura. My ego and identity were getting in the way. I couldn't see my limits, and as a consequence, I couldn't see her strengths. But I realized she is much better than I at taking the first cut. I shouldn't even try. Then afterwards, I may suggest changes and even go back to first principles to rethink her plan. But we are way better off when she takes the first swing. Kouzes and Posner write that credible leaders accept and act on the paradox of power. We become more powerful when we give our power away. I used to think of this with an attitude of, I can probably do this better than somebody else, but because I only have 50 to 60 hours per week, I should spread the work to get it all done. As I become more and more honest about my significant limits, though, I gladly give the work away for efficiency, but especially now for others to bring their significant strengths to the game. When I was young, I had to prove myself. There is truth, I'm not denying it, that in law, business, politics, and education, people do seem to look for those three attributes: super knowledge, super speed, and super mental range. I see clearly now that it led to super stress, super inefficiency, and probably what was, or certainly looked like to others, superb and disempowering arrogance. Whether we are 20, 40, or 60, we do well to question the kinds of assumptions that have truly held me back. I made it so much harder than I had to lead with others and with my best self.